Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of A Blind Insight. Myself, Simon Hill, and Billy Spateman. How are you doing, Billy? You all right?
All right, yeah, not too bad.
It's funny, we had quite seemed ages between us recorded the last couple, but then it only seems like we were here 5 minutes ago. So. Yeah.
Soon come round.
Soon. Got a few songs as usual, and hopefully a mix of good news and I'll have my say on something that's bugged me in the news of late. But started on a bright note. As you may remember, I said I was sort of going through the process of I'd applied for a job and then ran into difficulties. With systems not being accessible, and I didn't sort of talk about it on here because there was so much going on. But basically, the long story short was that the original job I applied for with the DWP, I couldn't do, but they've now hopefully found me one I can. So I'll be working on the Universal Credit applications and queries and all that area of things. So it'll be interesting and no doubt stressful at times, but yeah, it's just a good relief to have it.
Probably within the last couple of weeks then you'll
be getting. Yeah, there's been a lot up in the air and I've not taken anything for granted, you know, but they've now said start date to the 3rd of June, so.
Oh, great stuff.
So, yeah.
And is it very different to what you were going to try and do with them, or in terms of, you know, what your function and stuff like that?
It's hard to say because I never got as far as sort of getting my teeth into the other job, but it's still, the other job was going to be working on disability benefits, so it's still, I imagine it'd be very similar, but just obviously slightly different processes. But yeah, so that's...
And is it similar, because you work for the police, and is it a similar sort of thing in terms of the paperwork side? And will they have to put into place anything that you need before you get there? Or will you have almost like a, you know, like a, not a training period, but a period where you can settle in?
Yeah, so, well, that's kind of what the delay is now, while I'm not sort of, you know, while I'm still a bit sceptical about the start date and everything, but you know, that's what they've said. But yeah, so basically they'll need to make sure that my screen reader software is all there ready, because obviously there's no way around that. I can't use a computer and do the training without it. So they'll need to make sure that's there. It'll be different to from what I've seen of the job. I went there on a visit just before Easter, and what I've seen and understand, it will be different to my jobs before, in that I won't just be answering phone calls. A lot of it will be dealing with information coming in online and some phone calls, but if you need to find out more information from people or, you know, follow things up. But it'll be a lot different to being stuck on the end of a phone answering goodness knows how many phone calls a day. So,
and in terms of the info on the screen, then is it a bit like we used to use when we did transcriptions? It used to then read the transcriptions to us, rather than you have to read the document yourself and then you work through the transcription.
Pretty much. I mean, it's hard to describe. I mean, I've got an idea for one of the shows to do a demonstrate of what how a screen reader sounds. I'm figuring out how that might work still. But yeah, the screen reader has to interpret what's what you can see on the screen. So this is why text is okay, but then if there's lots of images and graphics and that sort of stuff, then it's, you know, there's not much you can do with that. It's not that as brilliant as it is, it's not that clever. So that's why things have to be done in and set out in a certain way, so it can you know, the simpler the better, basically. You know, if things are set out in a logical order and you know, the less complicated it is, the easier it is for the screen reader to understand.
Mm. It's strange. While you were talking there, I was just thinking, because you always get the argument as which would be the, you know, the worst, to be deaf or to be blind. And I presume with deaf people that they've got the, you know, the text at the bottom. But you have to, if you're listening to a film or a program, you've got to imagine what's going on, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the old thing about, you know, when people throw it at me, oh, it could be worse. You could, and I think, yeah, but surely it's all. I mean, all I would say is, if you know, if you've only got one, be it being blind, being deaf, you know, that's, you know, again, a world away from. I mean, being blind, deaf, I mean, would just be unbearable. You know, I can't begin to imagine what the quality of life must be. But then people do live like that, and see, you know, so you know, I don't want to put words in their mouth, but I think at the end of the day, the way I see it is, if you're deaf, then, you know, you can still drive, for instance. You know, you can potentially have hearing aids, or I mean, again, it's something I'll never really be able to experience, but I imagine it must be very sort of, I don't know. I always think, oh, it must be tiring in a way, having to read everything that's said on a screen. You know what I mean? You know, you can't just sort of switch off and listen to it. You know, you've got to read every word, and so that must be very. You know, I can't. I mean, I'd be very interested to know whether deaf people do find that enjoyable as such, or whether it's just that's what they have to do, so they do it. Or, but yeah, it would. I mean, you know, imagine a film. You know, of, you know, 2 hours or whatever, and having to read every single word, and so yeah, I mean,
I sometimes put the text on to see what it would, and you do type. In fact, you sort of don't. They must get up to speed, for want of a better word. But I find that you ain't got enough time to read the text half the time that's on the screen.
But when you think, you know, because so often there's usually, you know, one person talks and another, or sometimes two people, to get all of that in, you know, it's a bit like audio description. Audio description can only tell you so much in the time it's got. Yeah. It must be very, you know, it's one of those, something's better than nothing, but give it obviously, of course, doesn't give you the full experience of being able to see everything that's happening or listen to it, you know, because obviously they don't get the sound effects and the music and, you know, so I think it's a 50-50 thing. I think at the end of the day, it would be, I think it's just as bad for different reasons, not being able to hear as it is not being able to see would be my answer. But obviously, you know, it's...
And technology seems, I mean, from, you see articles in the paper about research projects and that, it does seem to progress at a quicker rate for deaf people than it does for blind people. And you have all these contraptions. They say, oh, we can insert this, we can do this, and it'll prove this, and it'll do that. But you very rarely hear any progress in terms of, I don't know, helping a person who's blind in terms of the sight. Can they? It's almost like, that's it, it's done, we can't do anything about it. But there are options, isn't there, with deaf people in terms of what they can do?
I think so. And again, you know, it'd be interesting to get a deaf person's point of view on this, but I would say the technology, I think, like I said, not being able to hear doesn't restrict you, as in terms of you'll still be able to use computers, you'll still be able to use phones, you'll still be able to use cash points, you'll still be able to walk around, you know, see where you're going, do what you need to do. That the problems in terms of data, it's mainly communicating, really, I guess, that becomes the issue, communicating with other people if you need them, you know, sign language and that. So that's where the difficulty comes with being deaf. But with being blind, it's like I say, you can't interact with, you can't just turn up and use a self-service checkout, for example, or a cash point, or, you know, I mean, they are supposedly now, there are talking cash points around, but you have to remember to have your headphones with you to plug in, or, you know, so it, whereas I think there's more.
There's less reliance on somebody.
Yeah, you've got more, I think your eyes give you a lot more than than listening does, in a way. You know what I mean? You can do much more with just being, as long as you can see something, you can do a lot more than, you know, because, I mean, let's face it, a lot of people go around with, you know, the headphones in, music in their ears anyway, so they're not really listening to what's going on around them anyway. So, yeah, I think it's such a bigger job to make something work for a blind person than it is for a deaf person. It's but yeah, it's an interesting comparison, certainly.
And is it, I mean, if you say you're at the Baggies and you're listening to the game,
yeah,
is it difficult to follow the game in terms of just from an audio point of view, or does it depend on who's commentating, who's actually doing the commentating? Because it must be that they're always slightly behind what's going on, and in relation to, you know, what's physically going on the pitch.
Yeah, of course. I mean, yeah, it depends absolutely on the quality of the commentary. So, but generally speaking, I mean, you know, even the best commentators in the world, at the end of the day, they're reacting to what's happened. So they've got to, by the time they've got the words out, the ball has probably gone to so-and-so, then on to somewhere else. But and as long as they are only, you know, a sort of second behind, then it's fine. But I think I've said on this show before, you know, it's one of my frustrations with modern-day commentary, which I don't understand on radio, because in the day on radio, nobody can see what's going on. So why radio commentators drift off and start rabbiting about statistics or get games that happened, you know, in the past? You thought, yeah, sorry, what's going on here now? You know, so I don't understand why that seems to have crept into the modern style of commentating, rather than just describing what's happening in front of them. But yeah, it absolutely depends on the commentator. You know, focusing on what's going on at the time and not drifting off and talking about. But I find it's okay.
And again, do they use the same audio, you know, same person every time at the Baggies, or do you get different commentators?
No, it's the same, unless obviously they're not away or on holiday. But yeah. It's the same people each time. Then likewise, and of course, you know, likewise, you've got the local commentary on local radio as well. So yeah, by and large, it's the same people. And I mean, it was good because I working with the All Access Albion groups I do to try and improve things for disabled supporters. One of the first things I did was mention the fact that the commentary sometimes was a bit frustrating because they were busy talking about things rather than describing the game. And they do seem to have taken that on board now, and they are more descriptive of what they're saying. So, I think it's just a case of people not realising sometimes, but it's just sometimes remind them, no, you are talking, commentating for some people who can't see what's going on for themselves. So, you know, everything you say is absolutely all the information they get, you know. There is a common theme with it being the same people each time, which
does it make it easier because it's a familiar voice?
I don't think that.
I mean, say you went to an away game and it's some Geordie bloke going on. Would that make it more?
Well,
nothing against Geordie blokes.
No, I don't. But it's funny because I've recently started going to away games, and in this day and age, you should be able to. If you can't get a local radio commentary, you should be able to get a commentary provided, like I'm going to Sheffield Wednesday tomorrow, as it happens, to watch the Baggies, and I've got to collect a headset there to get the commentary. But of course, they're biased, to some worse than others. But you know, you expect they're going to be biased towards the home team.
Yeah.
So I mean, I had a game recently, at a away game, I was listening to the commentary, and Albion scored, and the commentators just went silent. So, okay. And the only reason I knew we'd scored is because the crowd were going balmy around me. But there are, I mean, if you listen to enough, commentators have their different styles. Some get more excited, you know, whereas others are quite level, stay quite level, and
I was just thinking about that. If you're watching it, like my son-in-law goes to the Baggies, and you know, he'll be up out the seat and jumping about. If the commentator's fairly tempered in a way, does that detract from the excitement of the goal? Would you sooner scream and, yeah, you know, and really give it one in order for you to experience what somebody next year is experiencing, I suppose?
Oh, no, well, I mean, if I'm there at the game, then the minute a goal goes in, I can't hear what the commentator's saying anyway. So, you know, I have to, you know, in that second, you know, a goal's gone in, and then yeah. I'm not even listening to them for the next few seconds. So, if I'm listening back to it, it's like it's within reason. Like I think some commentators, if I'm listening to it on the radio, and I think some commentators go a bit over the top, you know, whereas others, you know, it's just a natural excitement sort of thing. But yeah, some of them do have a bit of a scream, which I think is a bit, a bit over the top, But yeah, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's each their own. Some people's styles, people will enjoy, other people's will think, oh, they're a bit loud or a bit, you know, a bit over the top. But at the end of the day, as far as I'm concerned, as long as I've got a good understanding of what's going on, you know, and then that's it. You know, like I said, if you're away, you expect the commentary is going to be a bit wanting the other team to win. But, you know, that still doesn't change. As long as they're describing what's happening, you know, then you know where the ball is and what's happening. That's the main thing.
So off the blindness, what's the chances then of making the playoffs and getting up?
Spoofy. Well, you know, a couple of weeks ago, people were just saying, oh, you know, we don't need another win. And then here we are and we haven't got another win. And now all of a sudden we've got two games.
You know, is that all that's left too?
Yeah, just two
really?
Games.
Really? Oh, my God. Oh, of course, because he finishes before the Premiership, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, so Sheffield Wednesday away tomorrow. They need the points because they're to stay up. So, you know, that's not going to be easy by any means. And then last game against Preston. Preston got nothing to play for now. So, but of course, I just never like things going down to the last game because it's just, you know, it's horrible. So,
but theoretically, if they make the playoffs, are they ready in terms of going up, in terms of a club ready to go up to the Premiership again? Or is it like a yo-yo thing? I mean, Leicester come down, it looks as though they're going to go straight back up.
We would struggle if we went up. I mean, the reality is there just isn't the funds to go and, you know, we would need quite a few. There's already going to be a lot of players leave in the summer regardless, and so there'd be a lot of changes needed. And you know, although the new owner's coming now, there's still a lot of financial baggage to be sorted out. So I think, you know, if we did go up, then it would be a struggle, and we'd more than likely come back down again. But, you know, but sometimes you need that, you know, in order to, if you accept that that's the case and you pick up, you pick up the money from it and so on, and then build again, you know, then, you know, eventually you can potentially get to establishing yourself. But it's such a gap now between, you know, the bottom of the top of the Championship and the bottom third of the Premier League. And then, you know, there's just, you know, the money that's around, the difference in money, the difference in all the, you know, it's just getting more because the TV are paying more, they're offering more, but it's only to the Premier League that, you know, the EFL Football League only gets in the end a fraction really of what they get. And in the end, I mean, hopefully with the rules coming in with financial fair play, that will help close the gap. But then there still seems to be this thing where certain clubs are still not, you know, still able to go and spend large amounts of money. So
I think the psyche of a lot of the, not lesser clubs, but the clubs who haven't gotten, you know, much money, has changed. Now the supporters think, oh, well, what happens? If we go up and we come down, it doesn't really matter. Let's go and experience and enjoy it for a season. We ain't going to get uptight about it.
Well, it's funny you say that, but like, it's with Albion. I mean, it's, I have to think about it because it's just, I've been supporting them now for getting on 30 years. But then there are some supporters now who, even in the, if you're not winning games, you know, are moaning and groaning. But you think, well, you know, you can't win them all and we haven't played. But then you remember that some people have only ever really remember you being in the Premier League.
Yeah.
So although that was like, you know, to a lot of us who it was an amazing thing to start with, but then the expectation goes up, and so all of a sudden people aren't happy, or you've got the moaning and groaning, and you think, well, you know, compared to where we were, so, but you know, you know, and like I said, you can't, you know, football doesn't work in the way that just because you on paper you should win a game doesn't mean you will, and vice versa, and that's at the end of the day what the appeal is.
Yeah, so. And I think the unfortunate thing with a lot of clubs is nostalgia plays a massive part, and you always, yeah. I mean, Manchester United is a prime example since Ferguson's gone. You know, we should be here. Well, no, because you ain't good enough at the moment.
It's like a national crisis at the moment that, oh, Manchester United aren't, you know.
Yeah, why aren't they doing it? Because they ain't got the, and with the Baggies, it's like, oh, I remember when Bobby Hope was playing and we had a great side. Yeah, but it's different. It's a different world now.
The game, well, you know,
and the game's changed.
Players don't play forever. The game's changed probably beyond recognition in many ways since, you know, those days. And, you know, when you listen to former players talking, they say some things are better, but some things are not so good, and vice versa. You know, so yeah, you know, you just, and then it's like people do that thing which I hate, which is all comparing players and teams from different eras. And I just think, well, you can't, you know, it's just completely.
I was talking to somebody the other day, and he was going, if Jimmy Greaves was here today, he'd be so-and-so, so-and-so. Go, well, you don't know that, because you might not be able to adapt to a modern way of playing.
You might not have been that fit, you know. Yeah. You know, were players back then, they might have been skillful, but were they that fit, you know?
Yeah,
you know, they used to go out and smoke and drink, you know, whereas nowadays it's...
Exactly.
You know, you've got to be... So, no, it's, you know, in the day, it is what it is. But no, it's, in the day, from Albion's point of view, we just hope now they've got an owner that's going to run it properly, and if we do go up, great. I mean, it's funny though, I want to get in the playoffs, but then I'm thinking, I don't know if I could bear getting to Wembley and losing a final. It's just
must be awful, isn't it? And I always find it's really weird. I mean, say, particularly if there's like a massive gap points wise so say there's, I don't know, first, second, third, and then there's a 10-point gap between third and fourth and fifth and sixth, and you think, and then sixth get through to the, you know, to the Premiership.
No,
well,
horrible,
that third place team must be so good. Well, the fourth and fifth, but the third place team that's almost made it must think, well, hang on a minute, we were 10 points in front here.
Yeah.
And we're not going to the Premiership. It must be absolute heartache, hadn't it, for them?
Well, it's, you know, the playoffs, they're great. If you don't finish, you know, if you don't finish third, then, you know, it's a bonus to have it. You get the crack at promotion. But to finish third, and normally, of course, they've normally missed out by a very small margin.
Yeah, yeah.
So then, and I mean, there's a statistic somewhere that say how often the team that finishes sixth go up compared to the one that finishes third because of the hangover or disappointment. And that's the thing, like with Albion now, it's whatever you do, you want to go into the playoffs winning games with momentum, because if you go into it stuttering or not playing well, then the chances are you'll get beat. So
you get beat.
But I'm afraid I'm going to go into a bit of a somber mode now.
Well, we've put the Baggies to right. We've put films and everything to right. So,
you know, and like I say, you know, this is just my thoughts. You know, I'm not telling other people what to think. It's just my view on it. And again, interested to hear other people's points of view on it. But it may have been 2 weeks ago now, there was an announcement made by the government, which was basically, essentially, talking about clamping down on the sick note culture, I think, as it was put. Basically, you know, looking at what the amount of, because we're told the amount of people that are on benefits and not working is going up. People, you know, and people claim they can't work because of ill health, so not because there isn't jobs out there, or even that they've already got a job, but they're just saying they can't work due to ill health, whether it's been something physical, something mental. And then they have to keep getting sick notes, which of course takes up GP time and et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, and they were talking about more support for getting people into work, or the rules that, you know, if people aren't actively looking for work at, within 12 months, or they refuse, or they refuse something like two jobs, then eventually, you know, their benefits will be stopped. And then, of course, people say, "Oh, you can't do that because, you know, how would they live, etc., etc." But the main thing that sort of frustrated me from the point of view of a person with a disability was the some disability charities jumped on board and basically criticised the government, saying that they, by doing this, they'd be persecuting people with disabilities and putting them into poverty, etc., etc. But you know, I don't agree with that. I think that's at the end of the day, if you've got a disability, then that's, you know, diagnosed. You've got your proof of disability, whatever it is. You don't have to get a sick note for a disability that's, you know, a permanent fixture.
Mm.
So, you know, and at the end of the day, it's the people that do claim that they've got a disability or say, oh, yeah, I can't work because of my mental health or my knees hurt today or my back hurts, you know, and you think, well, you know, it's these people that clog up the benefit system that ultimately have an impact on the support that those of us that do have a disability but are trying to find work, the support that we get because the time and money is taken up.
Mm. Are they targeting, obviously he's targeting sick note people, not, I mean, if you say if you've got a disability and it's registered as a disability, you don't need sick notes, you don't need this, unless you're sick at work.
Yeah.
But that's different.
That's a different matter.
Yeah. But so that really he's trying to weed out people that there aren't or haven't got a disability, but are using the system in terms of, you know, to try and benefit themselves. Also, I think what, you know, in modern society, there are so many things now that are categorised that weren't, even 10 years ago, like mental health has opened a great can of worms where people can say, well, I feel depressed.
Yeah.
I need a week off. Whereas, you know, when I was a kid, you wouldn't even entertain, you're a bit fed up. Your dad would say, well, get yourself off to work and it'll pass sort of thing. And you just got on with it. But now it opens the door where you can go, well, I think I better get... And I'm not decrying anybody who's depressed or anybody who's got mental health problems, but it has opened a door for people, hasn't it?
But,
in a way.
But, you know, and I'm talking as somebody who, even here today, I'm still taking antidepressants. You know, I've... Over the last few years, certainly, I've really struggled with my mental health. But the one main reason that I have is because I've not been able to get a job.
Yeah,
and so that's the I've heard it said before. That's the thing. If you don't, the people that say they're, you know, depressed or get, then, you know, why is that? You know, there's got to be a cause or something. You know, and for me, it was. For me, it's the case of being blind, the frustration and things that the effect that has on my life that gets me down, you know, and I've had, as well as medication, I've had counselling, I've talked things over, but ultimately it helps in the moment, but ultimately it doesn't change the fact I'm blind and nobody ever can. Mm. And, you know, and that's, you know, in my experience, the attitude, most people who have a disability, you know, no one can change it by talking about it. So they want to try and, you know, get on in life, but they just need a bit of some support to do that. But if you got out there, you know, if you're sat at home all the time, you know, then your mental health's going to, because you've got no purpose, you know, and whereas if they got out there and got a job, I absolutely, you know, believe that that would help your mental health because, you know, just sitting here now, knowing that I've got hopefully a job, you know, coming, and in a couple of months I'll have a wage in my pocket again, and that's made me feel instantly better about life.
And purpose is a really important word, isn't it?
Because, I think so.
You know, there's got to be some goal that you can try and achieve.
Well,
otherwise, what's the point, in a way?
Well, you know, do people... I mean, we constantly hear about the cost of living and people, you know, we keep hearing this thing about living in poverty. Well, hang on a minute. How many of these people don't have a job?
Mm.
You know, if you've got a job, that's straight, you know... Yes, you know, some jobs are paid more than others, and that's the way of life. That's the way it is. Some jobs are more skilled, some jobs aren't. But any job you get near enough will give you a better income and a better quality of life. And then, of course, it spirals on from that because people then sat at home. They're not going to work. They're, you know, on the sick or whatever, or getting benefits. Then what do they do with their time? They get involved with things like online gambling.
Mm.
So they sit there, gamble their money away, get into debt and all sorts of madness, And you think, well, you wouldn't do that if you were doing a job and didn't have so much time on your hands.
Mm.
And so it just really...
Is it easy to fall... I mean, you know, you haven't worked for a bit and you've got a job now. Is it easy to fall into that, I don't know, that comfortable state of mind where you think, well, I ain't going to get a job, so I might as well just carry on signing on, and you get used to that culture of life in a way?
Well, I guess it must do, and I can see how it happens, but, I mean, surely, I mean, you know, I couldn't go on to, you know, I've been absolutely, you know, I mean, if I do get a wage again, I'm going to have to pay off a few £1,000 in credit cards and an mm-hmm. overdraft, you know, because that's what I've been using to survive for the last 4 or 5 years now. So I can see how it happens like that, but I think ultimately, unless you've got somebody else who is working or, you know, some other means of income or support, financial support, then really, if you want any sort of, you know, I mean, do these people not want to do things? If you want to, you know, hobbies, interests, anything, you know, holidays, you know, all the good stuff in life, in the end, you need money, you know, one way or another. And so I can see slipping into a comfort zone and getting and liking the idea of obviously having your time is yours and you're at home, or you can do, but in the end, there must be times when you think, oh, if only I had a bit more money, I could do that, or I could treat myself to that, or but yeah, you know, there's got to be a point where you think, well, you know, there's got to be more to life than this. I mean, you know,
do you think the charities who, you know, took up the banner didn't really understand the reasons why it was done? In a way, and they weren't actually representing people with disabilities.
Well,
speaking the voice, because I mean, you might be a one out on their own, and like minded people like you that have got disabilities might think, well, actually, I don't think that.
No, yeah, and I spoke to a. You know, the one or two that I know to say, you know, is it me?
and
they said no, because I think what annoys us is that those of us that want, I've never, although, you know, there are people who work for these charities who their role is employment advisors or along those lines. So they're, in other words, they will say, oh, you know, we'll help in this case blind people to find employment.
Mm.
I've never found a job or anything through any of those people. And yet, so they don't do that bit very well, but then anything to do with benefits or that, they're quickly out there jumping up and down and shouting about it. Whereas when it comes to actually going out there and working with employers and, you know, shouting up about, look, you know, you can employ a blind person, it doesn't need to be that, you know, all this, they don't seem to put as much work into that as they do about crying when they think the benefit system is going to be messed with.
Do you think that's a good... I mean, because on Extra, it's an interesting point there. On Extra, we've got charities like Suits, the drug rehabilitation people. We've got AA, obviously, in Al-Anon. And almost everybody that works in those organisations has lived the experience. So when somebody comes in, and I mean, Suits say, well, we help people out with benefits, we help people out with this, not necessarily just their addiction. But they say, because we've lived the experience, our first thing is we understand that person.
Yeah.
And do you think it's maybe a cause of, it's a textbook thing that they've gone through, they've not lived, you know, the experience that you've lived, and therefore they don't really understand what you want or what somebody with a disability wants?
Well, yeah, I think, but then again, you know, that there are, I don't know the numbers, but there are, you know, I know of at least two blind people who work for the RNIB, for example. So, you know, I think there are people within these organisations that have got the lived experience of having the disability. But yeah, it's just interesting where they get their ideas from. And I mean, it's, you know, it's like all these surveys and polls, and you know, they put it out and say, oh, X amount of people think this. Oh, well, you haven't asked me.
So, you know, yeah.
Where do they get it from? You know, the numbers. So they get their information from somewhere. But yeah, I just think it's maybe a bit more effort put into actually finding out what, you know, the people you think or say you're serving or helping actually think and want, rather than just playing the same tune all the time.
And I mean, it's obviously done for good intentions, but it's almost like, you know, I don't know, opening the gate before, like a bullet to gate. And they're sort of not, if they'd have taken a couple of days to ask people with disabilities and then said, well, we've asked the people with disabilities and they feel this, they feel that they're doing right for standing up for people where without actually asking the people that it's affecting, I suppose.
But not just that, it's kind of, they're branding, or I feel, they're putting you as a disabled person, as in somebody that doesn't work or doesn't want to work. Well, that's not the case. If you're a disabled person and you want to work, well, then they're not talking about you, are they? Because you're not asking for sick notes.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're only talking, and, you know, most of us have known or do know somebody that has been abusing the benefit system or not using it for what it should be used for. And people get so annoyed with it. And it's things like this that make governments frightened of trying to deal with it. And it's so, you know, rather than just putting a blanket over the whole lot and saying, oh, you're going after disabled people. No, you're not. You're not talking about, let's break it down and talk about how it's broken down and pinpoint where the problem is and the kind of people that we're looking at, you know, and that would be a more measured approach rather than just someone tries to solve something. Oh, you can't do that. Well, that's that then. You know, and we're never going to solve things because no one's allowed to try and wheedle out the, you know, the fraudsters and the cheats and all the rest of it. So,
and I suppose then you've got to take in the whole circus that is politics, and they do it at a particular time to cause a particular reaction to, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And so you just have to accept that, but the run-of-the-mill person will just listen to what's ever said and, oh, yeah, OK, we'll do that because they say we've got to do that. So there's all that goes on, really, isn't it? But it is something that, I mean, when I heard it, I didn't really take a lot of notice. No. But then I can totally understand if somebody who's struggling, who's disabled and struggling to get a job, saying, well, it ain't me. I don't know what you're saying it's me, because it's not me.
Yeah.
You're not representing me. Well, at all.
And that's, you know, that's coming from the charity. You know, the government didn't mention disabled people.
No.
You know, they mentioned people claiming to be on the sick when, you know, whereas the charities then, hold on, you're picking on our members or group, whatever you want to call it. So the government then think, oh dear, you know, and then they, and so then the people who are getting away with it continue to get away with it because they don't, obviously governments don't want to lose votes. So then they don't, then it gets put on the back burner and ignored again.
So. I mean, it's always a case that there's always somebody who knows how to work the system. And I mean, when we worked in dementia, a lot of the people that worked in dementia would only do 15 or 16 hours because then they were on benefits and the benefits had stopped. So theoretically, they calculated, well, if I'm going to do 17 hours, then I need to do 30 hours.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not going to do 30 hours, so therefore I'm not going to do 60, you know, I'm not going to do 17 hours, end of story. If somebody didn't turn up for a shift, oh, can you stay 2 hours? No, I can't.
Yeah.
You know, not because they didn't want to, but it was just so complicated, you know, everything was made so complicated. So you sort of understand that part as well, and it might be their circumstances why they're on benefits, and, you know, there's no criticism of that. So the system itself kicks itself in the teeth, in a way, in some respects, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, it's a bit like, well, it's like I always say about the tax system. The tax system, to my mind, is unnecessarily complicated. Why can't we all just pay, you know, X amount, 10% or whatever, of what you earn? Then everybody, then if you earn, you know, 10 grand a year or 100 grand a year, you're paying 10% of what you earn. But instead of that, we go through this thing of, you know, higher rate, lower rate and all that. And with the benefit, like with universal credit, you know, that's the thing where it's, you are able to work and it's more flexible. So because that was the thing, the cutoff point, you didn't want to fall off a cliff. Oh, I've worked 20 hours this week, but then I've lost my 16 hours worth of whatever. So
yeah,
it's very complicated.
And you think, well, that person's under incredible pressure because she might, you know, love a job, And she might want to, I mean, she obviously wants to do it, but she can't, financially she can't, because you're not offering enough ever to make it worth a while doing it. Or, you know, she might not be able to do the 30 hours because of other commitments in terms of children and that. It's so strange. Right, Tom, we've got about 5 minutes.
Yep, it flies. I think I'm going to have to put in to have a 2-hour show at this point. So. But yeah, so I'll just talk then about, I mentioned on the last episode about the walk, the challenge I've got myself involved in. From Wembley to the Hawthorns. So in aid of the Albion Foundation. People can donate to my page if they, well, the easiest way is to Google Simon Hill Albion Foundation Blind Walk, and then that'll bring up the link for my personal page. But you can see everybody that's doing it. And
are any of the it's after the season's finished, obviously.
No,
right.
No, it's Monday morning we start.
It's
going Monday,
And how long do they reckon that you got to get back for the match, have you?
Yeah, that's so weird. So the schedule is now. So we travel down to Wembley Monday morning, walk from Wembley to Hemel Hempstead. Tuesdays, Hemel Hempstead to Milton Keynes. Wednesdays, Milton Keynes to Daventry. Thursday, Daventry to Warwick. Friday, Warwick to Birmingham. And then Saturday morning, it's about 3 or 4 miles from middle of Birmingham to the Hawthorns.
Blimey. And well, that's the last match of the season, is it?
That's the last home. I mean,
so presumably it's supposed to be a magnificent entrance just before the game, is it?
Well, not quite. apparently we're aiming to get there about sort of 10, half 10. The game doesn't kick off till 12:30. So
I'm
not sure what they've got. And then at half time, we'll get to go on the side of the pitch. But I'm kind of a bit, well, it may be all right, but when we did it, when I did it before from Liverpool about 10 years ago, getting to go around the pitch at half time was, you know, the highlight really for me. So that was one of the main reasons I decided to do it this time.
Yeah.
So, but they're now saying that there might not be time for us to do a lap of the pitch. So I'm, I was like, oh, joking.
What, before or half time?
At half time.
Oh, right. Really?
So I really hope they manage to squeeze that in.
Or even if you just walk out on the pitch.
We'll go on the side of the pitch. But
and then the funds you raise go to the foundation. And is that a communal thing, the Albion Foundation?
Yeah, so it's the, you know, the charity arm of the club, and they do all kinds of things in the community, not just football related. But so in terms of specifically this money, they're saying is going to be used for projects to do with blind football. But they obviously do all different disability football, walking football, lots of work in local schools with you know, assisting with physical education there, and and then things for the elderly, you know, people who are living with dementia. You know, it's endless, really, the things they're involved with. So
are any old players doing it?
Andy Johnson.
Andy Johnson, yeah.
So he's quite a character. So I've only met him briefly, but if I'm going to be, no doubt, be guided by him at some point for a few hours, so that'll be lively. So
and have you been in training or no? You're just going to do it?
I've done what I mean. It's one of those, you know, finding the time to walk. Sort of.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of 7 or 8 milers in walks. So that's more than I did in prep for the last time. So. Yeah, you know, it's going to be hard, obviously, and obviously it's a different thing going. It's one thing doing it for one day and then you're done, but going one day then the next day.
And I suppose if you do get any, you know, sores on your feet and all that, makes it even more. But you'll get there. I mean, Buskin Charles is doing a roly bonk climbing about 3 weeks Sunday. And it's 50 times up and down Rowley Bunk, and I'm absolutely dreading it for our charity. I've got to 24 and it's 2.5 hours, and I'm thinking, I'm going to be out here 5 hours. I can't be doing this.
Well, I was thinking because, oh, you know, it's May with the weather, but now they're talking, I'm hearing now they're talking about the weather plummeting to...
Oh, really? Sub-zero temperatures?
I've got no idea. Because I have to, well, I don't mind it being chilly, I just don't want it to rain. That's just the main thing.
That must be really depressing if you're wet and cold and stuff and windy and stuff like that.
We'll see.